Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700. And now, your hosts, Ryan White and David McKelvin.
Welcome. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour. We have with us today mortgage concierge Jim Lackey. His website, jimlackeyassociates.com, offers out-of-the-box financing solutions, and right off his website, specializes in filling the void left by institutions by introducing private sources of capital. That is quite a mouthful, Jim.
It is.
Well, we will certainly get further into that, exactly hard money loans, what can be done with it, the types of financing and the projects that are specifically situated for that. Additionally, Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services, when circumstances require the sale of antiques and fine personal possessions. Kathy, you've been on with us couple times thus far. You ought to get the program by now. Not too complicated, is it?
No, it's not.
We are excited to see Kathy Hawley back. She is the one that is able to come in and, well, really clean up the home, make some money, get a general idea of the value of the possessions. And we're going to talk about how that really has a calming effect on what usually is a very traumatic situation. So very thankful to have Kathy with us today as well. All right, Mr. Lackey, hard money loans, this has a very bad connotation to it. Very, very bad. You mean guy, loan shark, all those horrible things come up. Prove me wrong.
Well, I didn't say you were wrong.
Okay, good enough, good enough. Well, what I think is unique about what you have to provide here is that, I don't know, maybe the word is out. It's a little bit more difficult nowadays to get a loan. I mean, it's getting easier, and especially if you're looking to buy a already built structure.
Correct.
And you've got 20% down, and it's, you know, a home, it's generally not so hard. But let's say you're trying to build something. Construction financing from our buddy B of A is hard to come by.
Yeah, banks are actually getting more back into the construction financing of what I would call spec projects, and the term for sale. But the problem is you still have to jump through a lot of hoops with an institutional lender. More hoops than you do with a private source. And in particular, the bank is going to want you to personally guarantee repayment of the loan, whereas in the private world, we don't ask for that. We don't care about it as much. It's really more of a collateral-based loan.
Well, and I think I'd be willing to jump through more hoops to get a lower rate. I mean, I've jumped through a lot of hoops, but it really seems to me that banks right now, especially for the spec building projects, are only lending money to those that don't really need loans.
Yeah, that's where the personal guarantee comes in.
Sure.
If you're willing to sign a personal guarantee, you have to have a financial statement that will support that
right.
And make the guarantee meaningful. So, therefore, to your point, if you don't need it, you can probably get it. You
probably
can probably
get it.
Get the bank loan.
So really, the difference is the ability to get the money to finance the project. Being it, I would say very commonly, it is building of some new structure.
Correct.
Either to live in or to sell at some point in the future.
Correct.
And you mentioned a couple projects. Now, for the most part, this is residential.
Correct.
Right?
That's right.
Do you swim in the commercial pool at all?
Most of the loans that we do in the commercial space are more pulling cash equity out of an existing structure, not so much the construction of a commercial building
but
or
you still
an
loan
industrial
on
building.
It. I mean,
oh, sure.
You still loan on commercial loans.
Sure.
It's still viable real estate property. Okay, perfect. And you have on here examples, and I think really the examples are what's going to make this thing really hit home of projects that you've been able to finance that have been, well, are in some stage of completion. I mean, obviously you're not there to see if they, you know, how quickly they get completed, but providing the funding so that they can go out and complete the projects and, well, live in them. Or in these examples, people are selling these homes back to what was happening back in 2004 with people building homes and selling them.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, I think the main difference today is that there really is a shortage of existing inventory, and you know that, of course, in your business. And with that shortage, by definition, there are fewer new homes available to sell and to buy, and people always want to buy new, right? Ryan, they always want to buy something that new. I think the builders like to say the toilets have never been flushed. You know, they like that new construction, and there's just a shortage of that. And so having the ability to finance those and get those on the market helps everybody in the market.
So you have here on your list 3 row homes in PB, 2 custom homes in La Costa, 6 detached homes in La Mesa, right here off the top. So you're financing multiple projects all at once.
Right. I have access to quite a bit of capital, investors that aren't really afraid of construction. They've gotten their background actually is in construction, so they're not concerned about lending on what is in the beginning just a piece of land. What could be. They're lending on what's going to be there in the future once the property's actually been developed. And so, it's not uncommon to have several projects going concurrently, all with different clients. These examples that you mentioned there and that I listed, they're from 3 different builders, basically, just 3 separate projects.
And I would imagine there's some checks and balances in the process in terms of payouts, just to make sure that the particular builder doesn't take the money and go to Vegas.
Right. Yeah, there. And actually, some of that is by statute in the state of California. If you do a construction loan that's more than $100,000, all of the money for construction has to be domiciled with a third party, an escrow company. But in our world, it's really a fund control company. And
sure.
I use one of the largest fund control companies, certainly in San Diego, for all of my loans. And they do control the release of those funds. They make sure that subcontractors have signed off and that everybody throughout the process has signed off on this particular disbursement. You just release the money as it's needed.
And is there a particular way that someone checks to see if the work's actually done? Is that on your third-party company?
Yeah, actually, for every project, we'll contract for a certain number of inspections. So if it's a small project and maybe it's a project that's part of the way finished and it's a completion, there might be 6 or 8 inspections. If it's a ground-up, brand-new construction, 10 to 12 inspections. So the fund control company will come out there. They'll take pictures to get evidence that the draw request that's being made is there.
Is valid.
Anyone get paid for the foundation? Well, has the foundation actually been poured?
We're talking with Jim Lackey. He's our resident mortgage concierge. His website is jimlackeyassociates.com. That's his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. Now, we've been talking a lot about the construction market and construction financing, which is coming back. It's not full on yet, but it's coming back, and Jim certainly fills a void as far as that goes. And as far as construction financing goes, I would imagine there are certain loan-to-values and certain parameters one has to meet in order to get financing on a project.
Of course.
How high loan-to-value, and I know this is hard to say because sometimes you're financing a project that doesn't exist, right? There's just dirt there.
Right.
But how high does that go? How does that work?
Well, typically the way that we look at a construction project is lending a percentage of the cost. Because if you lend on costs, the percentage of value, finished value, is going to be lower. So if I lend 75%, for example, of the cost to acquire the land, the cost to do all the engineering and design and approvals and get building permits and that sort of thing, and the actual cost of construction, if I lend up, and that's about the maximum that my investors will typically go, is about 75%. Once the property's improved and the structures have been finalized and available on the market, that loan to finish value is going to be more like 60% or 65%, because they've added value to the what originally was just a piece of land or a lot.
Well, that's the idea. Well, that's why the contractor is building it, is to be able to make some spread. I mean, if they're building it for spec, to be able to make some spread on the deal. And so you're obviously needing to calculate or project the costs of a certain project. So if the cost of procuring land and building the structure is, let's say, $1 million, you're willing to lend approximately $750,000, ballpark in that particular property to get the project done, and the builder, developer would have to come in with the remaining $250,000 or thereabouts.
Exactly.
So 75% loan to value is kind of the max.
I would say that's true. I mean, the lower leverage that we provide, the safer it is for the investor. So we want to lend really as little as possible, but at the same time, we want to lend enough to be able to get the project out of the ground and built.
Yeah, you got to make sure the builder, contractor has some skin in the game, so to speak, so they're not just throwing their hands up and walking away, leaving a partially done project, which we experienced 10 years ago.
Sure.
I mean, that happened all over the place. I would imagine there were a lot of those deals that you financed way back then to get those things finished.
A lot of the loans that we did back then were actually broken projects that once things kind of came back around, somebody wanted to buy the property and finish it. And they were still looking for the capital to do though. Those loans are a little trickier, honestly, just because work's already been done. So you potentially have lien priority issues, title issues. Maybe there are some subcontractors that worked on it before, didn't get paid, and they still have notices and mechanics liens filed on the property, and all those have to get cleaned up. So it makes it more challenging than if you're just doing a ground up project.
So you're much more involved than our average, let's say, lender. So example, on my home, I've got a lender, Everhome. I write them a check. That's how involved they are. Maybe they sent an appraiser out. Maybe they didn't. You're much more involved with the process, one, because it's being built, and two, because it's essentially your money.
Correct.
I mean, I realize you get investors, but you're the bottom line kind of guy.
Right.
That's a lot of involvement in the process, and it seems like you're really there to make sure the project gets finished. I mean, that's a really important part of the job.
Well, in fact, depending upon who the investor is, I'm often in the loop as far as approving the draws. So when there's a draw request that's made, I'm actually representing the lender in some instances. So the borrower makes a request from the fund control. That request goes to the borrower and also goes to me. And I actually sign off on it myself because I don't want money just floating out there that my eyes haven't seen yet.
It's a good guy to have on your side.
Well, I have to protect the investor. That's a big part of what I do is mitigating risk and making sure that the money hasn't found its way off to Vegas to play
anything.
Blackjack or whatever.
right. And although you do have investors, you do also lend your own money as well. I mean, it's kind of all mixed in, right?
A little bit. Not as much these days. More of the investors that I have today are very sophisticated, and they really don't want to have anybody else in the mix. They want to, if they want to do the deal, they want to do the whole thing. They don't want to have a bunch of strange bedfellows, and not that I would be a strange bedfellow, but they don't necessarily want somebody else as a beneficiary in the project. They want to have complete control over the money that goes into it.
Well, we talked about a deal a while back in Ramona where I think you were putting your own money in into the situation to do the improvements or whatever necessary.
Right.
So I understand maybe you're not commingling per deal, but this is something you believe in enough to write checks out of your own account on your specific deals that you're able to find that way.
No doubt. I mean, I have. I was just telling somebody on the drive down here today that I did a loan last year up in Goleta, north of Santa Barbara, and it was a small loan for us. It was about $250,000, and I looked at the property online and looked at it on Google Earth, et cetera, but I drove to Santa Barbara to Goleta, and it was 4 hours up and 4 hours back and an hour with the client, and I've had people say, well, why did you go all the way up there? And I said, well, I have to see the property. And they said, well, yeah, but it's only $250,000. Yeah, but it's not my money. It's my investor's money, and I can't afford to have a conversation with an investor that says, did you see the property? And I go, no. It's kind of far. You know, I didn't really want to go up there. If you met the borrower, kind of far. So I'm always, my first responsibility that I have is to the investor who's putting the money up to get these projects done.
Sounds like a very good position to take. We're talking with Jim Lackey, Mortgage Concierge. His website, jimlackeyassociates.com. That's his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. When we come back, we're going to talk with Kathy Hawley. We're going to talk about some of the most fantastic finds she's had and how a general appraisal, and I'm not talking about the appraisal of the real estate, but an appraisal of the personal property, can often really calm down all the arguing that's going on during the disposition of the estate. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Jim Lackey, our resident mortgage concierge. His website, jimlackeyassociates.com, jimlackeyassociates.com. We're going to shift our focus to Kathy Hawley with Estate Liquidation Services. Why don't you explain to us what an estate sale is?
Well, Ryan, I'm most often contacted by the family or the executor of an estate for the attorney, and they want me to liquidate the entire contents of a property. So there's a contract, and I go out to the property and over a period of days sort everything out, display it, research what's there, price everything in the house, garage, yard, additional buildings if there are any, price it, advertise it. I advertise San Diego County and oftentimes out of our county too. Advertise it, bring my staff in, and then sell the contents at a public sale over a period generally of 3 days, generally a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And when that's finished, whatever goes unsold, sort out everything that's left. Some of it will go on. If there's value in the item, some of it will go on to a consignment store. Some of it will be donated. Some of it will go to an auction. If it's miscellaneous household goods, goes off to auction. If there's money left in any of the items, they get sorted to the location where we can get the rest of the money from them. Sometimes some particular items unsold will go to eBay, and then a lot of it gets donated. And then there's some things that just aren't suitable for any other use. And generally, I try to do a very thorough job of recycling. There's different types of items that get recycled. And then also all the hazardous materials have to be properly recycled. And then the minimum, I'm trying for zero waste, the minimum goes to the landfill.
Sounds like a great service.
Then I vacuum up the big chunks, hand the keys over to, generally it's the realtor who steps up next, and whatever needs to be done on the property to bring it to the point where it can be occupied or sold or rented, whether it's painting and carpeting or whatever, it's their turn to do that, and then the property's ready to go.
So we were working together on a situation in Oceanside where a woman had lived in the home for, I don't know, 50-some years, right on the water, beautiful, beautiful property. And she'd collected stuff, as we all do. My wife has so much stuff. Oh, my goodness. So this woman had collected stuff and was recently moved to a care facility. She became in need of such a thing. And so the home and the contents were left to, well, I guess her sons, right, her heirs. And that's really where you were able to come in and say, you know, let us come through and find the treasures and the not-so-treasures and really make some money out of them. But what I really think the service is unique here is, and we touched on this a little bit in the past, is that it calms the situation down. When people are arguing about that ring that was mom's and they're to say, hey, you know what, I'll just take the ring, you can have everything else, or they think things are free until you put a price tag on them. And when you identify the price and suggested value of all these items and send that list to everybody associated with it, be it the estate planning attorney, the relatives, whoever it happens to be, it really gives the family the opportunity of doing a equitable sort of the stuff and again calms everybody down. It seems like an amazing service.
I feel the same. It's my mission, having gone through my dad's death, which was very traumatic, and I was named as his estate liquidator in his trust. Having gone through that process firsthand, I was in the business for 15 years when that happened. I was totally unprepared for what my dad's estate sale was going to do to me. It was very traumatic. It should have taken 3 weeks. It took me 3 months to finish that.
Wow.
And when I finally finished, I handed the keys over to the real estate agent that he had designated, and I was driving up Highway 5. I said to myself, this is why people love me, because they don't have to go through this.
Right.
So after that, my mission became really to make it as seamless and as simple for every single client as possible. They're going through this traumatic event, and so are all of the people in the family. So are all their friends have to go through this, the friends of the person who passed away, the neighbors of the person who passed away. Everybody's going through this trauma. Let's make it as seamless and easy and professional so that there's nothing left undone.
We're talking with Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. You can find her on Facebook, Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. Again, Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. Find her on Facebook. It seems to me that, you're going to take and sell this personal property. And obviously there's money to be made associated with selling this personal property. That's very obvious. But really what I see in the big win here is that it makes the real property, the actual home, so much more valuable to be able to walk through that property and really see what there was to offer. And we talked about that one in Oceanside. There wasn't much more than a 3-foot path from the front to the back and, you know, maybe to the kitchen that you could get through. It was so packed with stuff because she lived there for such a long time that it really opened up and one could see the true value of the property. And I think what you were able to bring to the estate in terms of increasing the value of their home was far in excess of the actual value of the stuff they had in it. It seems like that. Go ahead.
Well, in the situation you're talking about, the actual executor for that estate lived in on the East Coast, so he was only there for just a few days, and he met me. And when I told him what I could do for him, the relief on this man's face. I mean, he could go home to and know that this was going to be professionally handled. And then when he met you, he had met a realtor who he knew was going to professionally handle his real estate. So, I mean, the relief that it brings to the client is really, you can see it in their face.
And in that situation, how long did it take you to kind of go through his stuff? They had a lot of stuff.
That was done on a time frame that was designated to me to meet.
Okay.
It was either or. And okay. I said, yes, I can do it. And that was 3 weeks.
Okay.
3 weeks from beginning to end. It was a 2-week prep, a weekend sale, and then just a few short days afterwards to clear the property. And then the property was going to close escrow from there.
Would you normally have preferred more time? Kind of sounds like you would have.
Well, I had to move quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, I usually do the prep myself. At the end, I called in some help just for the easy stuff, like hanging clothes and washing dishes and things like that. So,
oh, wow. Really get all the way into nitty gritty, so to speak.
Well, it has to be prepared so that it's suitable to see. That house was,
of course.
That was a difficult house.
Yeah, there was a lot there.
There were multi-generations were in that one.
There were multi-generations. You could see the walls, and your kids were there. The kids were raised there and grew up there, and it was a lot of history associated with that home. So 3 weeks, beginning to end, went through all the stuff, sold it, all the way down to washing dishes, and I'm assuming vacuum the rug so you could hand over the keys to whoever the next person is in the lineup.
Correct. The property's not clean, but it's clear.
It's clear. Got it. We're talking with Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. Find her on Facebook, Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Jim Lackey, our mortgage concierge, going to talk a little bit about commercial real estate and how his hard money will work in that situation. And after that, some of the most fantastic finds that Kathy, has found ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour. We've been talking with Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. Find her on Facebook, Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services on Facebook. We've been talking with Jim Lackey, our mortgage concierge. His website is jimlackeyassociates.com. That's his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. We talked a little bit about how he's able to fill the gap for construction financing, mostly geared towards residential property and really spec building, meaning that you're building more than one home, so it's not necessarily going to be owner-occupied. You're going to make some money on them, hopefully, and sell them. That's the idea,
right.
Speculation buying. building. Okay, so now we're going to shift our gears a little bit to commercial real estate, because you loan on commercial as well. Seems like you've got two examples right here in Carlsbad where you did that. Tell me about those.
Well, the first one was actually a purchase of a building that was bank-owned.
So it had been foreclosed on.
Okay. It was a tremendous value in the property, as evidenced by the fact that there were about a dozen potential buyers. And in that setting, these are all cash offers. The seller, in this case the bank, isn't going to really open an escrow with somebody that indicates they're going to have to go find financing, that they've
certainly
got to get a bank
loan. Offer more attractive when you don't have to go through that process.
Right, and
absolutely.
A bank certainly would know that it's not easy to get a bank loan. So these transactions have to be all cash.
Okay.
So on that particular transaction, it was $1.5 million purchase of a very nice building that was built just before the market crashed and had a lot of tenant improvements. And it went from a cold shell commercial building to fully improved inside and out, landscaped and whatnot. And the purchase price was $1.5 million. The borrower had $500,000 of his own. We came in with another $1 million to close, and close quickly. It's one of the real benefits of privately financed transactions. It tends to be pretty nimble. These loans oftentimes only have a couple of weeks end to end, and
right.
To start that process, I mean, you don't get a whole lot of progress with a bank in that short amount of time, much less get it closed.
We are able to give the feel to the seller that the offer is cash.
Correct.
In your particular situation, it turns out it really wasn't, but that's not that important to the seller. It's the feeling that it's cash, meaning that you can operate quickly. And quickly means not 3, 4, 5 months. It means, frankly, a couple weeks in your situation.
And we had to provide a proof of funds to the seller so that they knew that we actually had the capital, we had the money to be able to close, and they were fine with that. And as the buyer of the property, because there were so many potential bidders on it, I remember when we were talking about it, he said, well, looks like I won the beauty contest. So he was actually able to buy it, and it was our money, our quick, nimble money, that allowed him to actually close on that purchase.
So in addition to money provided to build homes, essentially non-existent homes, and maybe even to buy dirt to build homes, you're also willing to do traditional loans. I mean, really, in this case, 2/3 of value.
Right.
LTV, loan to value, is what you lent on this particular property for a already built structure.
Right.
It happened to be a commercial piece of property, but the same would work with residential if it made sense, I suspect, right?
Yes.
And so in a traditional sense, go out and get a loan. Because you could act so quickly and give the appearance to the seller that it was cash. Ultimately, you certainly disclose there was a loan involved and all
right.
that. There was no funny business going on. The seller knew, but that's really the reason he got it, is because he had your nimble money.
I'd like to think so.
I'd like to think so. Good enough. Well, we're going with that story. Okay, perfect. You got another one on your list here of another $1.5 million industrial building in Carlsbad.
Right. This is a case where the client is in a very seasonal business. They're currently getting ramped up for the busy time of year, and they need capital. They need money to be able to buy the inventory that they're going to sell. They actually sell their brand globally through distributors.
Okay.
They needed cash, and they didn't have cash. But what they did have is they had a building that was worth a lot of money. And so we did a loan there, actually, that paid off an existing mortgage and then gave them a larger loan, and that cash that came out of the loan proceeds is available for them to be able to buy the products that they need to be able to sell. And so it has a real significant impact on the company itself and its profitability. If they can't buy what they sell, the company's not going to do very well. That wasn't really a bankable kind of a transaction, because a bank would want to look at the company's financials, and they'd want to look at the personal financial condition of the borrower and that sort of thing. And in our world, you know, they're important items, but they're not the most important item. What's the most important item is the value of the real estate that we're lending on. And we had an appraisal that was only about 4 months old and got very, very comfortable with the value of this particular piece of property to lend against.
Got it. And so the idea there is you're able to provide the working capital, essentially a cash out refinance, which I think we've all got our mind wrapped around. Usually we hear about it happening, 10 years ago. And in order to buy the new SUV or, frankly, to go to Vegas, that's what most people did with their cash out money. But now in your situation, you're doing it so the particular business owner can buy product, the raw materials, or, you know, a good cause, so to speak, in terms of reinvesting in their business. It does make a lot of sense. And that goes back to lending money that banks normally wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about the show, about a situation where I would imagine this commonly comes up when mom or dad pass away or become incapacitated, end up moving out of the home because they pass away or they end up going to a home. There's commonly some amount of fight that goes on with the remaining parties, right? I mean, Kathy, I would imagine you experience this all the time. That's one of the benefits. Your valuation in terms of the real property is so valuable. When there's some kind of argument going on with respect to title and the will, et cetera, a traditional lender is not going to lend on the property. Let's say mom is equity rich but cash poor and needs to go to a care facility that's charging $8,000 a month. And let's say that it takes 6, 7, 8, 9 months to sell the home, get title resolved, actually close escrow and free up some cash, mom could be in trouble. And Jim, you'd mentioned that's a situation that a traditional lender won't touch.
Well, and even more so today with new regulations, some of the fallout from the financial meltdown that happened in 2008 is that the government passed legislation called Dodd-Frank that we're all familiar with. And one of the provisions of Dodd-Frank is that in order to get a mortgage, you have to qualify. You have to prove that you have the income. You have to show tax returns and bank statements and whatnot. And you have to show that there's actually income that's coming in the door to offset your expenses. And if you don't have the income, you're not going to get a mortgage. It would be illegal to do a loan in that scenario. So the regulations have made it more difficult to be able to get a loan like that. So, and we're still bound by regulations like that as well. But if the nature of the property is such that it is an investment property, or if the proceeds are going to be used for a business purpose and things of that nature, we can do a loan on that with some regard for the ability to pay. It's called the ATP, cleverly, the ATP, ability to pay provision of Dodd-Frank. It's a little easier for us to do because while we're still held to similar regulatory requirements, they aren't quite as severe as they are for what's called a qualified mortgage now.
You've got some ways around it to do a make sense loan, so to speak, within all the appropriate legal guidelines.
Correct.
And that certainly does make sense. In this situation, again, it was going to go to pay for mom's care, and they needed to free up some cash right away because they didn't know exactly when the home would sell. That was a really big concern for the heirs of the property, as I recall. Seems like a great situation for someone like yourself to come in and solve that problem, at least on a short-term basis. No, that brings us to, I guess, kind of our final topic here, the challenged borrowers, those that have gone through short sale, foreclosure, bankruptcy, you know, all those kind of things. It was a lot of people pulled the mulligan card, you know, within the last 10 years, and some are still in the penalty box.
Mm-hmm.
Lenders, traditional lenders, have a 2, 3, 5-year waiting period until you're able to re-borrow again.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of seems like you've got some ways around that.
Yeah, one example I can think of that's falls into this common sense type of a scenario, Ryan, is I had a client last year who wanted to buy a home up along the coast in the Encinitas area, and they had had an investment property a year previously that had gone under, and so they gave it up as a short sale, and it really kicks them out of the box from a traditional mortgage standpoint. They were inside of at least the 2-year seasoning period for a short sale, but yet they had a property that they wanted to buy. I recall specifically the purchase was a $1,010,000. They had $650,000 of cash to put down towards the purchase, which came from the sale of their other property. So, but they weren't going to be able to get a bank loan. It wasn't going to happen. So we did a privately financed loan there. Very low risk, obviously. We lend them $350,000, loan them $350,000 to go along with theirs. Closed on the purchase of that. And now actually they're just coming out of that seasoning period.
Right.
Next month, as a matter of fact. And so we'll actually get a traditional mortgage for them that pays off our privately financed loan. But they were able to buy the home that they wanted to buy as opposed to waiting for a year. And I mean, that house today, a year later in the coastal community, is worth more than what they paid for it. So had they not had a source of funding from a private party, they wouldn't have been able to buy that home, and they would have, who knows what they would have done. Maybe they're renting. It's hard to know.
Well, but the idea is there is that the home has gone up in value, which made it made it make sense for them to purchase, even though they're in that penalty box time frame, and you provided them the ability to do so. And now that they're out of it, or when they come out of it, you can go ahead and refinance them into a traditional mortgage. And from that point on, they're off and running. And so I think what you're saying is the foreclosure, the bankruptcy, the short sale is certainly important to the overall lending picture, but you don't have the specific guidelines that say if you have a short sale with the last 2 years, the answer is unequivocally no.
Right.
Other compensating factors.
Yeah, it's really more of a common sense way of looking at a loan. Is this really make sense? And if you're a lender and you can lend somebody $1 for every $2 of theirs, the risk of that loan going bad or that you're going to end up having to foreclose or something like that is really very, very minimal. So we don't have these artificial guidelines or even mandated guidelines for certain government programs that say a short sale has to season for a certain amount of time. We just look at it and say, geez, is it a good loan? Is it make sense? In this case, the borrowers were very solid. They happened to have an investment property that didn't do so well in one of the ground zero states of Nevada or Arizona or whatever it happened to be. But other than that, they were solid citizens, good stable income, made quite a bit of money actually. So no problem qualifying as far as our requirements are concerned. Well, very low risk loan. And so why not provide that loan?
We're talking with Jim Lackey. He's our resident mortgage concierge. His website is jimlackeyassociates.com. That's his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Kathy Hawley and talk about some of her most fantastic finds as she combs through people's stuff ahead of us when we come back. We've been talking with Jim Lackey, his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. That's his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. Shifting gears here, Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. So we talked a little bit about what an estate liquidation is and how you go through and provide an inventory, but you have listed here at the top, single items purchased, entire estate purchased, and estate sales conducted, which is a lot of what we've been talking about, and estate evaluations provided. Again, we also talked about that. But entire estate purchase. So if someone says, you know what, I don't want to bother with selling this stuff to the public, what do you got for me? You'll just buy everything on the spot. Is that how that works?
It's how it works. I used to do that exclusively.
Oh, really?
I used to just simply offer the dollar amount, and it was very popular. It was a very popular way because it's simple.
Yeah,
and the money was good on both sides, and everybody was happy. And I stopped doing that, Ryan, because it's like moving twice a month for me.
I can see that.
It's like moving twice a month, and it's a tremendous amount of work. So I use that now very judiciously. If there is strong value to the estate, I would consider buying it outright. But actually, I've changed my framework a little bit because my desire at this point in time, my mission for these folks is to get the most dollars possible out of the estate. And as far as a purchase, an outright purchase, across the board, it is the least amount of money that person will get.
Of course.
So if there's a possibility, the most money, generally speaking, almost always comes from the estate sale. So if I stay true to my mission, which is to bring the most dollars to this family or to this estate possible, then I always choose the estate sale.
And in general, when selling a home, and I mean the actual real estate, that is the going philosophy, obviously. But it always surprises me when I run into somebody that maximizing the sale price is not their number one goal.
Correct.
They don't want people in their home.
That's right.
They want it over right away. They have some reason that leaving a little bit of money on the table, and I don't mean like 50%. We're talking a couple percentage points, that they're okay just getting it over with here and now. And I would imagine that whole buy it now setup is exactly where that fits in. Now, it makes sense. You got to buy it at wholesale prices because you got to go back and sell it. I mean, that's the idea. If they don't want to go through the trouble of you selling it on their property, which could take 3 weeks to a month, you got to go sell it somewhere, and it makes a whole lot of sense. So to get it over with immediately, another possibility.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. Find her on Facebook, Kathy Hawley, Estate Liquidation Services. So we talked about the entire estate purchased, estate sales, estate evaluations, and single items. So if it makes sense, you're willing to go and just buy one item that you could go do something with, right?
Or a collection.
Or a collection,
sometimes
okay.
Sometimes people have a collection.
What's a good collection that you've bought every now and then?
Waterford. Waterford Crystal is a solid. It's a solid seller. Jewelry is a solid seller. It's okay. There's always a market for jewelry.
So maybe somebody doesn't want to have a whole full-blown estate sale. Maybe they still live in the home. Maybe they don't want to leave. You're willing to come in and buy portions of it, and mm-hmm. then you take it elsewhere to sell it is basically the idea, if they don't want to sell everything.
Correct.
Makes a lot of sense.
Or if it needs to be sold on eBay, a collection, then we can do it on a percentage basis.
Do that as well.
Yes.
Okay. So we promised to talk about some of your most fantastic finds. I would imagine you run across all kinds of stuff when combing through people's 50 years worth of belongings. What are the most unique finds you've made?
Well, some of the unique situations that have happened that have brought tremendous value to the estate was I was invited to a property in Oceanside last year, and the realtor said what he was thinking of doing was just backing up a dumpster to the property, taking out the sterling silver. There was sterling silver in a curio, backing a dumpster up to the property, and he had a fellow who was just going to simply shovel the household into this dumpster. Because when I said, well, let's take a look at it first. So I went out there, and opening the front door, it looked like somebody had taken all of this person's files and dumped them on the floor. The entire house was carpeted with documents, personal documents. It was in every room. She was walking on her personal documents everywhere. It was the most amazing. There was a room where you could just open the door like 4 inches because she had thrown so many things in that room. It had simply closed the door. You could no longer open the door. But there indeed was a great collection of sterling silver. There were some other high collectibles there, too. And walking through the property, I had the feeling that she was in such disarray to live in a house like that, which looked perfect from the outside. She was in such mental disarray to live in it like that, that we really needed to take some time and go through the property. So my recommendation was to the realtor, you have to clean it up anyway, so let's get it cleaned up and do an estate sale, which is what we did. And we ended up finding in her closets, she had put her mom and her grandmother's fine jewelry in a pocket. Each little pocket, each pocket had a little tissue in it. And inside of the tissue were these extraordinary pieces of jewelry. We had a $7,000 ring. I mean, it just went on from there. Gold items, beautiful watches. And if you had put your finger in the, if you put your hand in the pocket, you would say, oh, that's just a piece of tissue. But having found a diamond necklace on the floor among the papers in the bedroom, I knew that we were going to have to pick up every single paper, shake it, and so that's how we went through that estate. Piece of paper by piece of paper, it took us about 3 weeks to go through it with a crew and pick up every single piece of clothing and go through every single pocket. And when it was over a $50,000 estate sale when we were done.
I bet they were happy.
The nice part about it was nobody in the family knew about all of this because she had the way she had set up her trust. And as a result of our sale, I allowed the families, the members of the family to purchase their heirloom items back if they chose to, so that they could actually buy prior to going on the market with the public. So it really solved a lot of problems within the family. They were able to get their own family's items back, and the public was delighted with the sale. It was a very, very strong sale and very well attended. It was a good sale.
Well, it's quite a find. I would imagine that is far and away not the norm, but certainly a benefit of not shoveling everything into the back
into
of a van.
Into the dumpster.
3 weeks is a long time to comb through a property.
With a crew.
Mm-hmm. With a crew. We have just a minute or two left. Tell me about this one here in Fallbrook.
Oh, that was a wonderful lady in Fallbrook who, when I did her estate and her estate sale, and she was an avid collector throughout her whole life. When I asked her, do you have any jewelry? She said, no, it all disappeared when we had people working on the property. By the time I finished her prep, I brought her, she was incapacitated. I brought her over to where there was a large trunk and opened, not a jewelry box, a trunk like you put on the floor. I opened the lid of the trunk, and it was filled with all of her jewelry.
You found it.
I had put all her jewelry in that trunk, and this was an estate. She said no, she had no jewelry at all. And it was fine jewelry and fine costume jewelry.
Wow. We're talking with Kathy Holly, Estate Liquidation Services. Find her on Facebook, Kathy Holly, Estate Liquidation Services. She can provide an estate valuation, which is a general estimate of the value of the personal property within the estate that often can be used to settle disputes associated with the disposition, who gets what within the family when somebody becomes incapacitated or passes away. It seems like a very popular service, a great way of killing a lot of the inter-family arguments. As well as Jim Lackey, Mortgage Concierge, his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. That's his website, jimlackeyassociates.com. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.
Until next week.